Welcome to Culture Voice, an international perspective on the marketing of arts and culture, in partnership with the Arts Marketing Association of the UK. And now, your hosts, Carol Jones and Ron Evans.
My name is Carol Jones, and I'm here with my co-host, Ron Evans, in the US. How's it going, Ron?
Good, Carol. Happy to be with you here today to talk a little bit about moving the needle. We talked about that beforehand, but give us an intro. What are we chatting about today?
Well, as you say, we're talking about great expression, Ron. I love it. Moving the needle. So it's all about attracting people who don't usually attend at all, who aren't theatre people, who don't consider the arts as something for them. We're going to come up and we're going to kind of poke a big stick in a few strategies that we've come up with, see what works, what people could try, just to get the juices flowing, come up with some ideas.
It's great. I think this is a great example of cross the pond thinking here. I know you have some strategies that have been in use in the UK that I think US audiences could benefit from, and vice versa. So let's just go back and forth. Once you throw one out there, strategy, we'll talk about it a little bit, then I'll go. And I think we've got six total planned. But what would be first on your list in no particular order?
I think it's the importance of taking a whole organizational approach. As you know, Ron, I'm a great believer of begin at the beginning. And you have to do that when you're looking at developing totally new audiences. There's no quick fix here. There's no magic wand. This is some of the toughest stuff that we'll ever do as arts marketers. There's that lovely expression, it takes a village to raise a child. And you have to get everyone at all levels, not just marketing and comms, but involve your programmers, involve your people who are doing community engagement, outreach, participation, whatever you call it, everyone across the organization. You need to know your brand inside out, the mission and the vision. You just need that shared understanding of what you're about, why you're doing it, who you're trying to reach. Otherwise, you're going to fall short really quickly. So make that investment of working across your organization first. There's a program in the UK called the Audience Diversity Academy, which is run by the Arts Marketing Association. And one of the participants on that academy, Hull Truck Theatre, did exactly that. So they brought together these small internal focus groups, and they just asked each other, how do you perceive diversity, different audiences? What does it mean to you? How do you see all that in Hull Truck and what we do? And as a result of doing these kind of quite short, sharp focus groups, using drawing pictures and writing, different techniques to get this information from their team, they started a project, a new project called Community Dialogues. They created a family play area, which was visible from the outside of the building. They translated all their marketing materials into appropriate different languages, and they hosted lots of get-to-know-you sessions, coffee mornings, that kind of thing. But one of the key things they did, I think, was they set up what they called an inclusive action group. And this is a group of cross-level, cross-department people who come together regularly to make sure they're on track at getting new audiences in to see Hull Truck.
Mm, I love that. I love that. You know, this, I love the concept that this is organization-wide. The difficult part of that is, how do you know that you've achieved it? How do you know that you have checked off the box? And the point here is that you can't, because it's not a black or white decision. There is the focus here needs to be on exactly what you described. that you're making an effort to move in this direction versus not making any effort at all. And through that effort, part of that effort should be an evaluation of the success and making changes along the way to adjust your outreach, your messaging, what's happening internally, et cetera, to try to bring in folks that are not regular arts attenders. And we all know people like that. But I don't want people listening to feel like they can't accomplish that, because everybody can accomplish that effort. And the point is to start focusing on that, having internal committees and having dialogue. As a perfect example, getting everybody together for your monthly meetings or whatever you do, what is the talking points that you want to install in every staff member that if they run into somebody on the street and they start a conversation about what do you do, et cetera, what is that person going to tell somebody who's not an arts person? If the lingo and the vocabulary and the jargon and all that stuff is not going to work with somebody that's not familiar with cultural terminology, let's give them some talking points. Here are two or three things that you could say to talk about the benefits of what you do and why people should get involved. And that's a perfect example of how you can start from the inside out, as you say, which is a term I love that you've shared with me, but that give people some real tools that as they go around their interactions with people in their daily life, they have some method of working towards this goal.
Talking about tools, Ron, there's a great series of short training videos on culturehive.co.uk, which are worth a look. They're only about 4 or 5 minutes each, and it goes through a campaign here called Not for the Likes of You. That was over 30 organisations across England, and it was all about how those organisations could become more accessible to a wider audience by, as you say, changing their positioning and messaging and working as an organisation completely. And they cover things like how to engage and involve, how to devise a programme that says, this really is for you. You're not alienated in any way. It talks about meaningful benefits and what they could be, about making links with both those potential attenders, but also other organisations, using their language, not your language, and all about customer welcome as well and the importance of that. So they're great, very short videos that you can just fit in at lunchtime or whatever. Really say, go and have a look at those.
Yeah, let's learn from how other organizations have already dealt with this. You're not alone out there, everybody. You're not siloed. You're not the first one that's tried to figure out how to answer this question, find a solution to this challenge. Many other organizations are working on that. Culture Hive is a great resource to be able to tap into some of those conversations that have already happened so that you can start off where they ended and you can move your own needle forward as you extend the research. I love it. I love the internal idea. I love having everybody on board. I'll throw one in of mine. One of the things that we found over here that's been a primary motivator for attendance to events by non-arts people is knowing somebody in the show or at the museum or in the exhibit. Family members coming to see other family members who are performing. And maybe they don't go to any other arts and cultural thing ever, but they go because they want to see their family member performing on stage in a theater example, or interacting with art or however that is playing out. So being connected to somebody who's doing the art, we find is a great way to bring people in. So that would be on a per show basis. You're doing a show, you have cast members, they bring in people from far and wide who don't normally come to the theater, for example, and that works. Now that's on a per show basis. You could also easily, as a marketing director, plan a campaign over the long term where you have, I'm going to call them arts ambassadors. So people who are connectors, who are influencers out in the community, and their job is to find people who are not normally arts attenders. And they have tools that we've provided them to bring those people in. When you know somebody who's connected with an organization and they can vouch for the organization, and there's that testimonial effect that comes along with that, where people are going to trust that person and therefore trust the organization. So many walls are dropped in that case. Shields go down. People are going to listen to the person that they know. And there's a great opportunity for those two people or multiple people to come in around that arts ambassador that's making this shared experience possible. And they're going to have a great social experience. And even if they don't like what they see or what they interact with, the fact that they're spending time with somebody that they like to spend time with is always going to color the experience more positively than if they'd been there by themselves. So that certainly can be a great tactic either on a per event basis, or also looking at a campaign and starting something in that organization of yours where you're finding arts ambassadors out there and motivating them to reach out into communities that don't normally participate in the arts and bring them in the doors.
Lots of great arts ambassador schemes here in the UK too, Ron. And I'd also say if you're trying to attract a specific community, maybe look for the gatekeeper. That's the word we use here. Who's the community gatekeeper? Again, it's about building up that trust and reducing those barriers. Things like, you know, transport, who are you going to go with, that fear of the unknown. By going through a gatekeeper, all those barriers can get reduced and it's going to be easier for people to enjoy themselves. And that's what it's all about.
Absolutely. We want people to have a good time. We want them to remember this great experience that they had with somebody that they trust, they like spending time with.
Yeah.
What's number two on your list?
I think it's about know your audience. Segmentation, Ron. So if you know your existing audience, you're going to have a much better chance of identifying people who are similar to them but who don't attend. So you can work out where that potential growth is. Use what you know about your audience to find more people like them. This is as tough as it gets for us. So try and look for ways that will help you and make things easier. And certainly segmentation is a really positive route forward. So say if you're looking for younger, culturally diverse people who are looking for an all-round experience, think about the social elements that you can offer. Think about your social space. Think about how you can add value to the experience. Is that something that resonates with you across the pond, Ron?
Absolutely. The idea of knowing who is in your audience so you can find more people like them is a fantastic strategy. And what you're doing in that case is identifying people that have some of the same qualities, and they're hopefully going to behave in the same way of the people who are coming right now. The other benefit of that, of knowing your audience and having a good idea of who is already coming, is that you can know who's not coming based off of that. Who is not showing up? We can tell right now who is here, who's not here. And are there people there that are a potential pocket of audiences? What is their way to access them? And a great tactic at that point would be to go back to those gatekeepers that you just talked about in those communities. And what can they do to share the benefits of this? I've seen that roll out many times where there's kind of a trickle-down effect. Influencers, gatekeepers are at this first level. They become educated and excited and passionate about what's happening at the cultural organization. And then that trickles down to all of their constituency and people that they're in contact with. And that's a very effective tactic if planned correctly from the beginning.
Yeah. What's the next one from you, Ron?
I have got selling the benefits. So most of the time we think about people wanting to attend the arts because of the experience, whatever happens then, the artistic exchange. The communication that happens between the artist in whatever form and the audience member, and that when the curtain goes up, when the music starts, when the museum doors open, etc. But there are benefits to the arts that are not as often cited. So if you think about it, people will sign their kids up to take extra classes in science and math because they know that it's going to help them moving forward and planning their career and getting into university and all those sorts of things. They may not really be into science and math themselves as parents, but they realize that the benefits of having that extra education and that time spent in that subject matter is valuable to their family members. And so they sign them up. And I think the arts needs to do more in that area too, by talking about how the arts and creativity are connected, how people can use the arts to tap into parts of their personality that they have not brought out before. Leadership is a huge connection to that. I have a friend on the East Coast that's come up with this great connection between Shakespeare and leadership. And he teaches Shakespeare in a leadership class, and there's role play and there's acting and all this stuff together wrapped up in the text of the Bard, which I think is a interesting way of looking at leadership and running organizations from history. That's, you know, a cornerstone of certainly theater is Shakespeare. So what are the benefits? What is attending going to do for people who don't normally come? Here's a perfect example. Stress relief. The news is crazy right now. People are exhausted. They are hearing about terrible things happening all over the place. It used to be you just hear about terrible things that happen down the street. Now you hear about terrible things that happen across the world where you have absolutely nothing that you can do about it, right? It's outside of your sphere of influence, but yet you still hear about it because our personal communication is so rapid right now. We hear about those things, we internalize it, we get stressed out. Hey, going to a museum between 5 and 7 and walking around and getting rid of some of that stress so that you don't take that stress home to your family, that's a fantastic benefit that could convince somebody who is not an arts person to go and try it. And that's outside of the actual arts experience itself. But what are the other benefits that you could come up with that you could share with people that would motivate them to try your arts experience? Selling the benefits.
Do you know, Ron, this is a really basic start for marketers that we're all taught at the beginning of our careers, features and benefits. And it's something that we all forget about, and how important it is. And time again, I'm reading information from organizations and they just list the features. And one of the things I always say is ask yourself, so what? So if you have a summer school for kids, which is based on theatre, don't just say that. Ask yourself, so what? And that'll prompt you to think, what are the benefits of this? And what are the benefits are for the parents? So are the kids going to tire themselves out, learn a new skill, whatever it is? Stress the benefit, not the feature.
I love it. So what? It's an easy thing to remember. I think you could so what a couple of levels down before you get to the really core emotional stuff, right? So we have a school. So what? Well, it's going to have a bunch of activities for kids. Yeah, so what? Well, they're going to grow as people and become, better speakers or something. Okay, so what? As you go deeper and deeper, you're getting into more intrinsic benefits as to why this makes sense. So you might, as a tactic, do the so. We're going to call it the Carol So What exercise. I love it. go through it as deep as you can and then toss out the first two levels and you're probably going to be right on target as far as listing some real emotional benefits.
Yeah.
Like it. I'm going to so what the rest of my day. Carol, what's your next one?
Well, it's a well-tried and tested campaign strategy here in the UK called Test Drive the Arts. And it's exactly like test driving a car. So same principle, try before you buy. And the basic principles of it are you give out guest tickets to people who've never attended your organization before, and they are from your unsold capacity. So it gives people the opportunity to try out the experience and reduce some of the risks that are usually attached to it, some of the barriers. And it's a really important part of starting that relationship. And once they've been, once they get sent a very short 60-second survey the day after the event, so you can start monitoring and evaluating if it's working or not. The best campaigns last over a period of a year, and you're gradually reducing the risk and also upping the ask, I suppose. So first time they have guest tickets, then they have reduced price tickets, and then they're paying full price. Lots of successful examples in the UK. It was first developed by Maurice Hargreaves McIntyre, but in Northern Ireland, they ran a really huge collaborative audience development project based on Test Drive with 50 participating organisations all over Northern Ireland. They had just under, I think, 2,500 applicants for the scheme and encouraged over 5,000 people. That's huge, to attend the arts for the first time. Run by their then CEO of Audiences Northern Ireland, Stephen Hadley. Really great, very simple thing to do. You just need to keep up the evaluation, keep up the impetus, and make sure that you continue to monitor and evaluate as you go along.
That can work, and it sounds like it's worked more in the UK. I've seen that happen here in the States, but usually a couple things get in the way. First thing gets in the way that I see is that marketers treat this on a show-by-show basis. So they have extra tickets. They want to put some bums in seats, as my friend Roger Tomlinson hates the term. Hi, Roger, throwing this out to you. They want to get some people in there sitting in the seats, and it's better than having an empty auditorium. So they come up with a scheme like this to give the tickets out to, you know, teachers, first responders, something like that. But there's, it's just for that show, and it's a complete panic for the next show. So that's the first thing. It has to be a strategy that you're going to try over a period of time, and you're going to treat it just like every other marketing strategy. With seriousness and watching how it evolves along the way. The other thing I see getting in the way is what you mentioned is measurement. Yeah. A lot of what I've seen over here, there's no measurement. So if you send somebody a survey after they've received a free ticket, are they likely to fill out the survey? Yeah, I would argue psychologically they are more likely to do it because they could consider it to be a payback for the free ticket that they got. So they say, oh, yeah, I love the arts. This was an amazing experience. I'm going to come again. But do they actually come again? Now, you're telling me in the UK, when they've done that measurement over a year's time or something like that, that's great because you can actually see that the attendance is occurring again and again. And that's the whole point. Over here, we don't see that nearly as often. We'll see somebody that has a program like that. They measured it for that program. And then was there any check to see if any of those people came back 2 years from now? Are their names coming up in the database again? No, people don't go to that level. But that's really the thing that we want to see. We want to see if this has an effect over the long period of time. Otherwise, what are we doing? We're just getting rid of tickets on a per-show basis. And yeah, there's some benefit there to people that don't normally attend. But if your goal is to try to stimulate a habit, yeah, where people are going to make the arts be a part of their daily life, then you got to look at the long term and measure this over time. We can't be looking at this on a local level for just one performance or something like that.
It's not a one-hit wonder. As you say, you have to do it and work at it, follow up on that data. You're getting new rich data in. That's key as well. Use it. Don't just forget about it. So get that data, however that's formed, including the surveys, and follow it up. And then maybe the next kind of contact could be, hey, you went to see this show. What did you think about it? You told us you liked it. We want to give you a 4-for-2 offer. Come back to us. We're really keen to see you come back. And you can make it with some test drive campaigns. All this is kind of upfront. We want you to come for a year. This is what the offer is going to be. Join us on the journey.
I like to make a slight tweak on that messaging that I found to be effective over here. And those of you who know me, who've worked with me, who are my clients, et cetera, you know that I'm not Mr. Discount. I am almost fundamentally against discounting across the board. I'm not a discount person. So if you're going to give away these free tickets, my fear there is that there's potential devaluing of the brand. If the ticket is worth nothing, why are you giving it away? All that kind of stuff. We've talked about that many times. I would love it in a case like that if the messaging included something about somebody else paying for this ticket. Maybe it was a grant that the organization received so that it could provide these tickets. Maybe it was some other patrons. The anonymous donor has made this possible. There's a big difference there between saying, hey, we have free tickets for you, or hey, we have a special program to reach out to people who don't normally come to the arts where your ticket is paid for via this program. Later on, we want you to pay for the ticket. But right now, the ticket has been paid for by somebody else. So there's a responsibility that happens there. I think there's an extra driver to show up. There's some accountability there. If there's a sense that somebody else has paid for this and that you're taking a slot that somebody else would normally get to attend, you're going to have a little bit more of a drive to not just not show up on the day of the performance.
And there's a real value exchange then. And people appreciate that because it doesn't devalue your program. You're absolutely right, Lauren.
Yeah. Yep. I'm a big value. We work so hard to create value. Don't give it away so quickly. Don't give it away so quickly. My third one, which I think will make our six, is the idea of creating cultural tie-ins. Cultural tie-ins with popular movies, books, TV, action figures, toys, what have you. A great example of this is the Silicon Valley Symphony here in San Jose in California. Recently did a movie program where they played a live score of the first Harry Potter movie and then projected the movie on their big screen. So you watched the first Harry Potter movie, and then all the music was done live in sync to what was happening on screen. And the hall that they did this in was like a 2,400-seat hall. They sold out every night for 3 nights because people wanted to have that different experience. Harry Potter fans out there, we've all seen the movies. For me, as an arts person, to tap those two things together and have a live symphony where I'm already so moved by the music in the movie, but to be there and have it happen live was magical, no pun intended. But when I looked around the auditorium, I saw all kinds of people that were not normal arts people. I talked to some people during the interval and chatted with them and found out that they're just Harry Potter fans. So we were able to bring in symphonic music and the experience of going to a concert and everything else that's similar to having a symphonic experience, other than there's normally not a big screen projection of a movie in there at the same time. But that's, in a way, a trial. But it's a trial with some sort of relevance that somebody can grab onto. They know the movie. They want to see that. And they're having the music come along with that and the experience of attending the symphony as part of that. So if there's some way that you can tie in to cultural knowledge, maybe there's some sort of external outdoor event that's happening coming up that's a commemoration of a famous event or something like that. And you could find a way to tie your arts experience in with that so that you actually deepen the experience. The information is richer and people are attracted to it because they already want to hear about this in one realm and you're tapping into that same realm in a different form. So is there a way that you can make some sort of a cultural tie-in with your arts organization?
It's interesting you talk about outdoor events, Ron. Certainly here in the UK, those free open air events attract the broadest, widest audiences. And a lot of those people are people who don't normally attend other arts events. We had a huge event here last year called City of the Unexpected, celebrating the work of the author Roald Dahl.
I remember that.
It attracted tens of thousands of people into the city with things happening all around Cardiff. And they used various things to then attract those people back. This was run by the National Theatre of Wales to see the rest of their programme. So they're making that initial link through an open air free event and then continuing to build the relationship.
Yeah. I remember you talking about that. You worked on that, didn't you?
Yes, we did the audience research around it, which was fascinating in itself and quite difficult completing for the field workers, completing questionnaires when actually you couldn't move because the city was so packed. You literally could move 5 inches in front of you and to the side, and that was it for certain parts of the event.
Have you seen those t-shirt guns that you load up with t-shirts and then you fire them out into the crowd?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, we should do that with surveys. We just poof, fire it out, surveys in the crowd.
Great idea.
I love it. Well, there you have it, folks. 6 different strategies that you can put into place immediately, I dare say immediately, to try to attract people that are not normally arts attenders. And we'd love to hear feedback from you. Carol and I would love to hear if you've put any of these strategies into place. But Carol, great job coming up with some fun strategies with me.
You too, Ron. And that's the episode, folks. We'll catch you next time as we discuss other relevant issues in the world of marketing, arts, and culture.
All right, everybody. Cheers for now.
Bye.
You've been listening to Culture Voice. If you like this episode, subscribe and stay connected to our international conversations on the marketing of arts and culture.